We're doing our class in Navi, and we were up to Judges. We had concluded the story of Devorah, the prophetess, and the Jews had peace and quiet. We saw her great song. We had 40 years under her rule, and again the Jews sinned, and they were given into the hands of the Midianites, a nomadic tribe. We discussed that Midian was actually a human being named Midian, the son of... Midian was the son of? Thank you, Avraham and Keturah. Avraham and Keturah had Midian, Veifa, Vaifer, Vachanoch, Vavida, Veeldaa, Kolele b'nei Keturah. So Keturah had many children that were sent out to the east. The Midianites were a nomadic tribe, and they lived east of Israel, and they had many, many, many tents. And the Jews lived in hiding because the Midianites would swoop down into Israel. They'd bring along with them Amalek and the other eastern tribes. We said they were part of the eastern clans, the other descendants of Avram. And they'd destroy everything they could find. So a prophet comes to Israel and says, I took you out of Egypt. I took you out of slavery. I saved you from all the oppressors. And I chased these nations out of the land and told you, don't be pagans. Serve me. And you're not listening. So the Jews hear the rebuke. And then an angel comes to Aviezer. That's the eastern side of the Jordan. And he comes to an area of Gilad. That's an area on the tribe of Menashe. And over there we have a man named Yoash, who himself follows pagan worship. In his cattle, he has a cow, two calves, that he's been raising for 7 years in the anticipation that he will slaughter them in honor of the Asherah, the Baal, the pagan gods. And his son, Gidon, who's not too learned, but he's a very kind person. He's not so young. He already has children of his own. His son, Gidon, is there, and he says, Dad, you're an old man. If the Midianites come, you won't be able to run. Let me do the work. And Gidon is very powerful. He is threshing the wheat. When you want to clean the wheat of the chaff, the external, the husk, the external peels, so you bang the wheat around, and then the wheat breaks, and then you could throw it in the air, and you could clean off this shell that the wheat has. Now, ordinarily, you let cattle do it. You put it on boards, and the cattle walk around, and it bounces on the boards, and then you break it. Gidon is standing there in the gat, where they have a press, and the press has this huge beam, which you would ordinarily put down on the grapes and squeeze out the grapes. You leave it resting on the grapes for a while till all the grapes are squeezed out. In order to stay in seclusion from the Midianites, inside this grape press, they are threshing the wheat. And Gidon is standing there lifting this huge beam and knocking it down on the wheat with tremendous power. He's a very powerful guy. Ordinarily, you lift it once, you put it down on the grapes and finished. He wants to thresh the wheat. He doesn't want anyone to catch it. So he stands there and he's lifting this huge beam up and down to thresh the wheat. And the angel comes and the angel sits under a tree. Now, why does an angel have to sit? Just like in this week's parasha, the angels are climbing up and down the ladder. Angels need ladders to get to heaven. What happens when there's no ladder, right? So the angels have wings. Oh, angels need wings to fly? We say that each of these teaches something. Angels don't need wings to fly, and they don't need ladders to get up and down from heaven. And the angel doesn't have to sit in the shade of a tree. So when the angel comes and he's sitting under the tree, the angel is telling him message number one. I am a representative of Hashem. Hashem doesn't leave the Jewish people. Just like I'm sitting here waiting for you to address me, so too Hashem is waiting for the Jewish people to turn to Him. All you have to do is turn to Him. He's waiting. You're suffering. Talk to Hashem. Why aren't people davening? So that's one message He's giving him. The Midrash says that the angel came under the tree and Gidon did not yet merit to see the angel, to have this prophetic vision. And the Navi is recording that to tell us that Gidon only merited to have prophecy after he tells his father, Dad, you're older, it's hard for you, you go inside, because I could run away more easily if the Midianites suddenly show up for a spot check. So when he does Kibbut Aveim, he comes to help his father, that's when he merits to prophecy, and he's going to merit to save the Jewish people. So the angel shows up to him and says, God is with you, mighty one. He must be mighty to lift the beam and knock it down like it was a little piece of wood. So he says, Hashem is with you. And from here we learn that you greet a person with Hashem's name. And Gideon says, Gideon is not yet, he doesn't yet understand that this is an angel. He says, sir, if Hashem is with us, why are we suffering like this? Last night my dad told me that we were saved from Egypt. Last night was Pesach. Right, it was the night of the morning after Pesach. So where's all the amazing miracles we heard about? Why aren't we seeing them now? If our forefathers were righteous, we should be saved in their merits. If they were wicked, Hashem saved them. I just heard the story last night. So why isn't He saving us? And Hashem tells him, go. That claim is what's saving the Jewish people. And we have to know Gideon was not the most pious Jew. Gideon was not the most learned Jew. And we are taught in this story in Tanakh, and our sages reiterate the concept in the Shas, that no one can know who will be the one to turn the tide for the Jewish people. When the Jews have it bad, we each have to take a personal responsibility to pray, and to say our prayer in a unique way, finding a unique angle to address our Creator. Obviously we're addressing respectfully, but prayer involves a certain personal element, where a person should invest himself in being unique in the way he presents his prayer. And so Hashem tells Gideon, you did it. With that claim in heaven, the tide has been turned, and now you can go save the Jewish people from the Midianites. So Gideon says, I understand you're telling me this in the name of Hashem, but my section, my battalion among Menashe is the smallest, and I am the youngest in the family. How exactly am I supposed to do this? And Hashem tells him, I'm going to be with you. You will conquer Midian. And I'm giving you extra strength. Even though until now you might not have been the greatest warrior, I'm hereby giving you greater strength. And Gideon says, okay, I don't know you. He doesn't realize he's talking to an angel. He says, give me a sign. You're talking to me in the name of God. I'm going to bring out an offering and place it before you. The angel says, I'm waiting. Gideon comes, he slaughters a goat, he brings some matzah, and he pours the gravy, he brings a pot of gravy, and he puts it under the tree. And the angel says, put the meat and the matzah on this huge rock and pour the gravy over it. He does that. And then the angel extends his staff, he touches the meat and the matzah, and a flame shoots up from the rock, and everything gets consumed, and the angel disappears towards heaven, and as he disappears towards heaven, he says one final line, he says one final thing to Gideon, he says, Shalom lecha al tira, peace with you, you have nothing to fear, you won't die. Because Gideon's first thought when he sees such a miracle is, wow, that was an angel, I'm going to die, I just spoke to an angel. So the angel leaves him with that final message. Peace be with you. You're not going to die. You have nothing to fear. So Gideon erects an altar there, being that the final word he heard from the angel was Shalom. He names that spot Hashem Shalom. And from there we learn, that's one of the sources from where we learn, that one of Hashem's name is Shalom. When we say Shalom Aleichem, we're not only saying peace be upon you, we're also saying Hashem, whose name is peace, should be upon you. So that night, Hashem appears to him in a vision and tells him, those two calves your father's been raising for 7 years to slaughter for the pagan god of Baal, I want you to take them. One of them you take just so that they don't slaughter it for Baal. The other one you take and you're going to sacrifice it for me. Go to the great altar your father has in the public square, and it's designated for the idol of Baal. Destroy it. There's a special tree that they worship on top of the altar that's called an Asherah tree. Cut it down. Build a new altar for Hashem. And take that wood and burn that calf in honor of Hashem. Now what Gideon is about to do is biblically prohibited 6 times. It is prohibited to bring a sacrifice outside the temple of those times. It is prohibited to bring a sacrifice at night. It is prohibited to bring a cow that was worshipped. They worshipped that cow. It is prohibited to bring a cow that was designated for idol worship. It is prohibited to use wood that was designated for idol worship. And it is prohibited... What's the final thing?
The
Asherah tree. I said the Asherah tree. I'm missing one. What were the six things? We said night outside the altar. And he wasn't a Kohen. That's the sixth point. He has no right to bring a sacrifice. He's not a Kohen. So when Hashem tells us, we have this concept of a Horaat Shah. If a prophet is told for a one-time occurrence, Hashem says, do this, even though the Torah says not to, I'm telling you now you should. So provided that it is not idol worship, then one is permitted to listen to the prophet and do it. So Hashem is telling him to do this, even though technically there are six prohibitions involved, being that Hashem told him to do this once, Hashem isn't saying to change the Torah. He's saying, now I want you to do this. That's what's called the Hora'at Sha'ah, and he's permitted to do it. So Gidon takes 10 servants. Now it's going to be a Kiddush Hashem. 10 people witness it. But he's scared of doing it by day. He does it at night. The next morning, everyone sees what's happened. They say, who did this? Who knocked down the altar? Who cut down our idol? They hear Gidon did it. So they come to Yoash and they say, give him over. We're going to kill him. And Yoash says, what are you fighting for Baal? If Baal is a god, let him fight for himself. So they said, fine, and they renamed him Yerubal, which stands for Yorev Bo'abal. The Baal should fight him. Now, Midian and Amalek are gathering in Emek Yisrael, which is a little bit to the north. They're gathering to attack Israel. Let me see if I have a map here. Yeah, you have it there? Okay, you have it on your map, because on my map it doesn't show up. Okay. Gidon now is aroused with Hashem's spirit, and he blows the shofar. He gathers the tribe of Menashe, Asher, Zvulun, and Naphtali. So he's gathering the northern tribes. Okay, remember, the tribe of Menashe is divided to the eastern and western side of the Jordan. Menashe, just north of Menashe, if we're in Israel, just north of Menashe, we have Yisachar, Zvulun, Naphtali. Those are the tribes, the northern tribes, that joined the battle against Sisra. Remember, Sisra, our previous enemy. So now he's uniting the northern tribes to fight the Midianites. And Gidon says, I want a sign. I'm going to put out this piece of wool, and if there'll be dew on the wool, and the rest of earth is going to be dry tomorrow morning, that'll be a sign for me that you're saving me. No dew will fall on all of planet earth, just on my piece of wool. So he wakes up the next morning, and his piece of wool is so full of water that he can squeeze it out and get a full cup of water. But he looks at the rest of earth, and there's dew on the rest of earth. Because in heaven there's a pact with earth, that even when there's a drought, there'll be dew on earth. Hashem doesn't stop the dew from falling. And Gidon asked for a sign that would be destructive to the planet. So Hashem wasn't willing to give him that half of the sign. So Gidon is a little uncertain. He got half of what he asked for. So he says, Hashem, please don't be upset at me. Let me ask one more time. Tomorrow morning, let all of earth have dew, but my piece of wool should be stark dry. So that's what happens. The next morning he wakes up, and all over there's dew, but his piece of wool is completely dry. So he got his sign. So over here, Rav Saadia Gaon asks a question. He says, you're not allowed to test Hashem. So what was Gidon doing? So Rav Saadia Gaon writes, he says, Gidon wasn't asking, can Hashem do it? Can Hashem allow me to conquer the Midianites? Gidon was saying, I don't know if I have merits for such a great miracle to take down such a great army. Show me a sign, Hashem, that I'm going to be successful to do it. I know you could do it, but you're sending me to do it. And I don't feel worthy. And we're going to see, Gidon was considered the lightweight of the judges. Gidon was not so learned. Gidon had good reason to be concerned. So, Gidon is advancing and he sees the Midianites to the north. And Hashem tells Gidon, too many people with you. Because the Jews will think they won because they had a great army. So tell the people, whoever's scared should go to the mountains of Gilad, and they should look on from there. So they have a total army of 32,000 people. 22 go to Mount Gilad, and 10,000 remain with him. So his initial army was 32,000. We're going to see that he's going to be very outnumbered. So this is amazing. 32,000 people were so pious they thought they stood a chance against the Midianites when they were heavily outnumbered. And now 22,000 go up to the mountain. He's left with 10,000. Yes?
When Rav Sadia Gaon said, does that mean that a person is normally allowed to test Hashem and what he will do?
Doesn't mean Hashem will answer. You could ask. That seems to be Rav Sadia Gaon's understanding. Don't forget that Gidon had prophetic vision, but yes, that seems to be the direction of Sadia Gaon saying yes. So he understands it to mean,
will God do something is very, very, very different than can God do something.
So right?
If God will do X, you know, so then I should have Y side of God's desire for X.
Right, but you got to be very careful. Because a person can be very foolish. Meaning a person can say, I'm going to flip the coin. If it turns out to be heads, then I should invest in this stock. Well, 50% of the time it's going to be heads. Who said Hashem's going to get involved? Who said he's worthy of having Hashem get involved on his behalf? Maybe it'll turn out heads, he'll invest in the stock and he'll lose all his money. And he'll say, but Hashem, I know you control everything. Why'd you make it heads? So one answer is, maybe he deserved to lose all that money. The other answer is, maybe Hashem did not get involved. And Hashem said, why should I get involved for you? Are you worthy of my getting involved? Gidon is being sent on a suicidal mission, a mission where there's no logic that backs his success. And Hashem's telling him to do it. He's going to succeed. But from a logical perspective, this was suicidal. So he's saying, Hashem, if you're sending me, please give me a sign. He is worthy of asking that question. He is the messenger of all of Am Yisrael.
That he would be successful?
What?
Didn't he already receive from the angel that he would be successful?
It's a good question. I don't know how Rav Sadia Gaon answers that. I don't know. I could answer based on a Ramban, but in Rav Sadia Gaon's answer, I don't know. When join us for our Torat Hashem Tamima classes on Friday, the Ramban discusses what the impacts of a sign are. And that we can apply that Ramban over here. The question is, would Rav Sadia Gaon go with the Ramban's understanding? I don't know. Back to our Navi. So Hashem tells Gidon, too many people with you. I want less. Go down, take the people to drink. And over there I'll tell you who should come and who not. So he takes them down to drink. And Hashem tells him, those that drink from the water, they scoop it up in their hand and they drink the water. They lap it up like a dog, put in one group. And those that bow on their knees to drink the water, put in another group. And those who scooped up the water were a total of 300 men. Everyone else bowed by the water. And one understanding is they literally bowed by the water. Another understanding is that because they were accustomed to bowing towards idols, that was their natural prose when they came to drink the water. So Hashem says, take only the 300 men and send everyone else home. So they take the food and they take the trumpets and they send the rest of the people back and they're looking down at the Midianite camp. And Hashem tells Gidon in the middle of the night, go down to the camp, you're going to win. Now, ordinarily, you didn't fight battles at night. You couldn't see what you were doing. There were no street lights. And what? No night vision goggles, right. Nighttime was not a time to fight battles. So Hashem is telling him to do something which is against all the rules of battle. You go at night, you could trip on the smallest thing, go win your battle when you can't see where you're going. So Hashem tells him, go. And if you're scared of going, which is very logical, he has only 300 men, he's outnumbered, we're going to see 100 to 1. If you're scared of going, take your lad Fura down to the camp, you'll hear something down there, and then you'll have strength, you'll succeed. So the Navi describes that there were so many soldiers that you couldn't see the end of the army. You'd look out, and as far as you could see, there were soldiers. And Gidon comes down, and he hears two people telling one another a dream. It's the change of the guard, and one tells him, you know, I had a dream that there was a barley rolling, and it came on a tent and knocked down the tent. So his friend says, well, the barley represents Gidon, because the Jews just brought the sacrifice of barley on Pesach, and it must be that God gave us in their hands. And when Gidon hears that, he realizes he's won. We say in the Gemara that a dream goes by its interpretation. When you have a dream, you should always interpret it for good, because your interpretation defines how the dream will play itself out. So now that he's heard this dream, and he's heard the interpretation, he hears the Midianites are scared stiff of his tiny army of 300 men. So he divides his men into three groups. He gives every person a shofar, and he gives every person an empty pot of pottery. And they're all carrying torches. And he tells them, you're going to do what I do. And he divides them into three battalions. They approach the camp. He blows the shofar. Everyone blows the shofar. They throw down their pots. They make a huge noise. And they yell out, Cherev Lashem ule Gidon. The sword of Hashem and Gidon is upon you. And the people get up in the middle of the night. They don't know what's going on. You have different camps. Remember, the Midianites, the Amalekites, the Bnei Kedem, they don't speak the same language. They're not the same army. And Gidon and his men just stand blowing the trumpets. They're not doing anything yet. They're standing there with their torches. No one knows if they have a whole army behind them or not. All you see are 300 men with torches. So what's the assumption behind each man? Who knows how many soldiers there are in the dark? You see a group. You know, this is what we did when we were fighting to conquer in the Six-Day War and in the War of Independence. So we didn't have that many soldiers. So at one point, they wanted the Arabs to think we had a lot of soldiers. So what they did was, when they had a camp, they would take the trucks, they had, let's say, 10 trucks. At night, they would turn the truck's lights on and drive towards the camp. And then they'd shut the lights off, drive back, and then turn the lights back on, and then drive again to the camp. And all night long, they did this. So the Arabs are looking at the camp, and they're thinking, wow, they brought thousands of soldiers to their camp. We're finished. And when the morning would come, sometimes they'd all run away. They wouldn't even stick around to fight. Because they saw all night long, trucks were coming, lines and lines of trucks, right? This was one of the tactics we used. And yes? Right, that's what we just said. So the Midianites wake up in the middle of the night, and 300 men are standing there. They threw down their pots, shattered them, blew their trumpets, stood with their torches, and started yelling, the sword of Hashem and Gidon. And they're standing around the camp, and they're blowing. So the Midianites blow a trumpet, we have to retreat. And they continue blowing their 300 trumpets. Now, what Hashem did was he caused them to start fighting one another. As they're trying to retreat, no one knows who the other one is, they start killing one another. And they're on the run in the middle of the night. And the Jews from the tribe of Naphtali all the way through Asher and Menashe, they start chasing the Midianites. And remember, Gidon has his men prepared, and he sends them down to conquer the waterways so they can't cross. And they conquer two of the leaders of Midian called Orev and Ze'ev. And they kill them, and they continue chasing Gidon. They're in the middle of the war. And the tribe of Ephraim turns to Gidon and they say, why don't you invite us to the war? And they start arguing with him forcefully. Now we're going to see that the tribe of Ephraim were not too learned. They were primarily shepherds. They were like the lowest class of people, and you see that in their actions. It's reflected by their behavior. Here they've been under the Midianites all this time, and no one was able to overthrow the Midianite rule. Gideon, who saved them, is being attacked because he didn't invite them to the war. So what does Gideon say? He's a good politician. He tells them, you guys, in the short amount of time you joined the battle, you killed the two top kings of Midian. You guys are so much more successful than anything I've done. Gideon right away understands when they're bothering him, it's about ego. Why are you going to be called the great leader who won the war? So Gideon says, you guys did so much more than me. That's one of the rules of good leadership. If you can give credit, if you can make other people feel great, if you can tell them you did it, if you could give people that feeling that they are a success, you can be a leader. If you're constantly worried about showing how you're successful, how you've done well, people don't want to follow you. People think that leaders are about showing that they're great. There's a leader right now that you can see. He can't hold on to too many people being faithful to him because he's always busy showing how he has accomplished. I didn't say which country, I didn't say which politician. But the truth is that good leadership, leadership that really produces results, gives every person the feeling like they're a success, they've done something substantial. So Gideon calms them down, and now he could continue his war. He's going with his 300 men. They're tired. They've been fighting all night long. They're hungry. They come to the Jewish city of Sukkot, and Gideon asks them, give me bread for my men. We're tired, and we're in pursuit of the final two kings of Midian. And the people of Sukkot say, you haven't won the war yet. You think we're going to help you out? And Gideon says, okay, I will take them down. And when I come back here, I'm going to deal with your flesh. I'm going to punish you with the thorns of the desert. And then he goes up to the city of Penuel and he gets the same response. The Jews tell him, you haven't won the war yet. We're not joining you. And here again, we see the divisiveness of the time. We saw it in Dvorah's time. The Jews were prepared to run away from the war and not help their brethren. And here we see it again. Two cities have, under the guidance of their leadership, they say, we're not joining. We're not helping you. All he asks for is bread, food for his men. And so Zebach and Salmuna are left with 15,000 men. They have lost 120,000 men. So they numbered 135,000. They lost 120,000. Gideon had 300. So how much was he outnumbered? 300 times 10 is 3,000. Times 100 is 30,000. So he was outnumbered 300 to 1. His men were outnumbered a little bit more than 300 to 1. So they've destroyed. I can't say they've killed because the Navi says they killed one another in their haste to run. So 120,000 soldiers are down, 15,000 are left, and Gideon's going to attack them, and he's still outnumbered 50 to 1. 50 Midianite soldiers for every soldier of Gideon's. And so now he sees the Midianite camp down below, and he has to figure out how to attack them. The Jews have not given him food or water. And this is where we're going to pick up Mizrach next week.